All right, so today we're taking a deep dive into a Supreme Court case, Navarette v. California.
This one's a really fascinating one.
It really is, yeah. It highlights a lot about anonymous tips, traffic stops, and that whole Fourth Amendment thing.
Yeah.
And I know you're particularly interested in how this all relates to a traffic stop that happened because of an anonymous 911 call, especially with the marijuana discovery.
Oh, absolutely. That adds another layer to it.
Yeah, it definitely does. And, you know, this case is really relevant, I think, for anyone who's ever wondered about how we interact with law enforcement, like in those everyday situations.
It's about that tension, you know, between public safety and individual rights. And throwing anonymous tips into the mix, well, it makes it even more complicated.
So let's paint a picture here. We've got Lorenzo and Jose Prado Navarette. They're cruising down Highway 1 in California.
Okay, setting the scene.
Right. And all of a sudden, an anonymous 911 call comes in. It's reporting this silver Ford F-150.
Which, of course, matches the Navarette's truck.
Exactly. And the caller is saying this truck was driving recklessly, even ran them off the road.
Wow.
Yeah. So the 911 dispatcher, they relay this to a California Highway Patrol officer. The officer finds a truck matching the description and pulls them over.
Now, this is where things get really interesting.
Right. Like, buckle up.
Yeah. As the officers approach the truck, they smell marijuana.
Oh, boy.
Leads to a search, and they find, get this, 30 pounds of it.
30 pounds, that's a lot.
It is. But the big question, the one the Supreme Court really grappled with, was whether that initial stop, just based on the 911 call, was even legal. Did that call give the officer reasonable suspicion?
So it wasn't even about the marijuana itself at first, but whether they should have been stopped in the first place.
Exactly. And the court, they ultimately said, yeah, the stop was justified.
Interesting.
They leaned heavily on a few things that made that 911 call seem reliable to them.
Like what? What made it seem so trustworthy?
Well, for one, the caller, they said they saw it all happen firsthand. They gave specific details about the truck, where it was, all that. So the court saw that as a sign of real concern, not just someone messing around.
And it wasn't just any random call. It was 911, right? And right as this was supposedly happening.
Exactly. The timing was crucial for the court. They figured, you know, most people aren't going to lie when they know their call can be traced. They put a lot of emphasis on how trustworthy the 911 system is supposed to be.
Right. Makes sense. But wait, I thought you mentioned there were dissenting opinions, so not everyone on the court agreed with this.
Oh, you're right. This is where it gets even more interesting. We had Justices Scalia, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan. They all wrote dissents, and they weren't holding back. They had some serious doubts about relying solely on that 911 call.
What were they concerned about?
One of the things they kept pointing to was the lack of information about the caller. Who were they? Why were they calling? Was there any history there? All those unknowns made them really hesitant to give the police that much power based on a tip that could be, well, unreliable.
I can see why that would worry them. Like, if any 911 call could lead to a stop, wouldn't that open the door for some, well, misuse? Like, someone could easily make up a story about reckless driving just to get someone pulled over and maybe even searched.
That's exactly it, that slippery slope argument. The dissenting justices, they were worried that the majority's decision, it could chip away at those Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches and seizures. They were pretty adamant about that.
It does make you think, you know?
Right. And they also emphasized that, hey, simply being run off the road, it doesn't automatically equal drunk driving.
Which is what the officer initially suspected.
Yeah, but they were saying there can be tons of reasons for swerving.
True. Like maybe an animal ran out or the driver just got distracted for a second. It doesn't mean they're drunk.
Exactly. And the dissent, they highlighted that the officers, they actually followed the Navarette's truck for a good 5 minutes and didn't see any signs of impaired driving at all.
So they had time to observe.
Right. And for them, that lack of evidence, well, it should have been enough to say, okay, maybe this tip wasn't so accurate.
So we've got this clash of perspectives here. The majority saying, hey, we got to trust the 911 system, got to prevent drunk driving. And that's a serious concern.
Absolutely. No one's arguing with that.
But then the dissent is raising these red flags about potential abuse and the lack of hard evidence in this specific case.
It really is a fascinating legal puzzle. Makes you think, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. How much weight should we give to these anonymous tips? And where do we draw that line? How do we keep people safe without sacrificing individual freedom?
Those are the big questions, and this case really forces us to confront them head on.
Yeah, and it's all about how the court looked at reasonable suspicion, especially in this kind of situation with the drunk driving and all. Like, what did they actually think was enough to justify the stop?
Well, they basically said that even though the officers didn't actually see the erratic driving, just the fact that it was described in the 911 call, that alone was enough to make them think, maybe this driver is drunk.
So they're putting a lot of faith in that 911 caller.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah. They're trusting that what the caller said was accurate. And legally speaking, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it feels like a pretty big shift, giving that much weight to secondhand information.
You're absolutely right. In this case, the court seemed to prioritize the whole danger of drunk driving thing, you know, over the immediate privacy rights of the guys in the truck. Their reasoning was basically, if we let a potentially drunk driver keep going, that's a huge risk to public safety.
Yeah, I get that. Drunk driving is no joke. But it's still kind of unsettling to think anyone could get pulled over based on what might be a totally made-up accusation from some anonymous caller.
And that's exactly what the dissenting justices were so worried about. They were like, hold on, this could give the police way too much power to stop people based on flimsy evidence. And they kept bringing up the fact that the officers had 5 whole minutes to watch the truck, right? And they didn't see any signs of drunk driving.
So for the dissent, that should have been enough to say, okay, maybe we were wrong about this one.
Exactly. And it gets to the core of what the Fourth Amendment is all about, protecting us from the government just barging in on our lives for no good reason. But at the same time, we need the police to be able to do their jobs and keep everyone safe. It's this constant balancing act.
It really is. Sounds like a tough one.
It is. And in this case, the court seemed to think the whole threat of drunk driving, even if it was just suspected, that outweighed the individual rights in that moment.
So they tipped the scales towards giving law enforcement more leeway.
Right. But it's important to remember, even the justices who sided with the majority, they admitted this was a close call.
Really? They acknowledged it's a tough decision.
They did. It wasn't a simple open and shut case for them either. There were definitely a lot of layers to consider.
So what does all this mean for us regular folks just going about our day? Like, should we be worried that any random 911 call could get us pulled over by the police?
That's the big question, right? This case, Neverett v. California, it definitely set a precedent for how these anonymous tips can be used, especially when it comes to something like drunk driving. This is why it's so important to understand this case. It has a real impact on how we interact with the police and how our rights are protected. This isn't just some legal mumbo jumbo. It has real world consequences.
So we got to pay attention.
Exactly. It makes us think, where do we draw the line? When is an anonymous tip actually believable enough to justify stopping someone? And how do we as a society make sure we're keeping people safe, but also protecting individual freedoms? These are conversations we got to keep having.
It doesn't sound like they're easy answers.
Nope, not always. And the law is always changing, you know, adapting to new situations and technology. Cases like Neverett, they show us how those changes can ripple out and affect our everyday lives.
So we can't just ignore it.
Definitely not. We have to stay informed and participate in these discussions if we want to make sure our rights are being protected.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the majority and dissenting opinions, but can we dig into some of the legal stuff here? Like reasonable suspicion, what does that actually mean? Is it just like a gut feeling a police officer has, or is there more to it?
It's definitely more than just a gut feeling, but it's also less than what you need for an arrest, which requires probable cause. That's a whole other thing. The Supreme Court, they've said reasonable suspicion means there needs to be a particularized and objective basis for thinking someone might be up to something illegal.
So more than just a hunch.
Right. It has to be based on specific, clear facts, not just a feeling.
So in this Neverett case, the officer would have to be able to explain exactly why that 911 call, along with anything else they saw, made them suspect the driver was drunk.
Exactly. They couldn't just say, oh, I had a feeling. They'd need to point to concrete details, like maybe the caller's description of being run off the road, the time of day, or anything else they observed that could suggest the driver was impaired. It has to be something solid.
And what about hearsay? We talked about that a bit earlier. Can a 911 call, which is basically someone reporting what they heard or saw, can that actually be used as evidence in court?
That's where it gets a little tricky. Usually hearsay, which is like an out-of-court statement used to prove something happened, it's not allowed as evidence. But there are exceptions. And 911 calls, they often fall under what's called the present sense impression exception or the excited utterance exception.
So because the caller was reporting things right as they were happening, or very soon after, it's seen as more reliable, like more than if someone was telling a story weeks later.
Exactly. The thinking is, there's less chance of someone making stuff up or their memory being fuzzy when they're talking about something that just happened. It's supposed to be more trustworthy.
But in this case, the dissenting justices weren't buying it. They said the caller had time to pull over, grab their phone, and dial 911. It wasn't like someone yelling, "He's got a gun!" right in the middle of a dangerous situation.
Yeah, that's a subtle but important point. And it really shows how much legal interpretation matters in these cases. Even something as seemingly straightforward as a 911 call, it can become a big debate when you're dealing with basic constitutional rights.
It's amazing how one phone call can lead to this whole legal battle with such big implications.
It is. And it shows how the law is constantly being tested and reinterpreted. And this deep dive into Navarette v. California, well, it shows just how much those legal battles can affect our everyday lives in ways we might not even realize.
It's going to be a lot to think about, that's for sure.
Me too. And I'm sure our listeners feeling the same way.
Okay, so let's get back to the listener's question about the traffic stop and that marijuana discovery. How does all this play into whether any of that was legal?
Well, the Supreme Court, they said that the traffic stop itself, it was legal. And they based that on that whole reasonable suspicion idea, you know, coming from the anonymous 911 call.
Right, right.
And because they said the stop was legal, then the marijuana they found, well, that was admissible as evidence in court. It all comes back to that fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine.
Okay, yeah, fruit of the poisonous tree. I've definitely heard that phrase before. But can you remind me what it actually means, like legally speaking?
Sure. It's a metaphor, really. It basically means, if the police get evidence illegally, they can't use it against you in court.
Okay.
It's like, imagine you have a tree and you poison it. Well, any fruit that grows on that tree, it'll be poisoned too, right? So you can't eat it.
Makes sense. So in the Navarette case, the tree was the traffic stop and the fruit was the marijuana they found.
Exactly. But in this case, the court said the tree, the traffic stop, it wasn't poisoned. They said it was justified. So the fruit, the marijuana, it was allowed as evidence.
So even though the 911 call never even mentioned drugs, because the court said the stop was legal, that opened the door for the drug charges.
Yep, that's a key point here. And it's one of the reasons this case is so important. It kind of set a precedent for how the police can use these anonymous tips, especially when they think someone might be driving drunk.
And that can then lead to them finding other illegal stuff, like the drugs in this case.
Exactly, like a chain reaction. And it can have some pretty big consequences.
Really makes you think about how one seemingly small thing can have these huge ripple effects in the legal world.
It definitely does. In this case, it really brings up those big questions about public safety versus individual rights. You know, as a society, are we okay with maybe giving up some privacy to get drunk drivers off the road? And what kind of rules do we need to have to make sure the police aren't abusing their power? It's something we got to keep talking about.
Yeah, some heavy stuff to ponder. So to sum it all up, Navarette v. California really changed how we understand the Fourth Amendment. It basically said that even if the police don't have any other proof, an anonymous tip can be enough to create that reasonable suspicion they need to stop someone.
But that's only if the tip has specific details and it suggests there's an immediate danger, like in this case with the reckless driving.
Right, right.
And of course, we can't forget those dissenting opinions. Those justices were really concerned that this ruling gave too much power to law enforcement based on what they saw as, you know, maybe not very reliable information. They were worried about our Fourth Amendment rights being weakened.
It's definitely a case that still gets people talking, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Legal experts and anyone who cares about how the police and civil liberties intersect, they're still debating and analyzing it. It really gets at what it means to be free, but also safe in our society.
Oh.
And that's what we're all about with these deep dives. We want to give you, the listener, the info you need to understand these complicated topics and figure out what you think about them.
So what stood out to you about this case? What are your thoughts on how the court ruled? If you were a Supreme Court justice, what would you have decided?
We've only scratched the surface here, so keep digging. You could read the full court opinions, look into other similar cases, and really think about the bigger picture of what this decision means for our legal system and for all of us.
Until next time, keep on diving.